So we would like to invite all of the kids who are 4 years old through fourth grade to go to Children's Church at this time. And I always like to say, moms and dads, if you're here and you've got a child in that age group, you're here for the first time, and if you want to go with your child or your children down to Children's Church just to see that it's safe, we certainly welcome you to do that. So Dawn and I experienced a vacation a number of years ago that did not exactly go as we had expected. We were living in Sheridan, Wyoming at the time. We decided to go on a camping trip to Glacier National Park in Montana. We went with my parents, who also lived in Wyoming at that time. We had two small children at that time, our daughters, Brianna and Sage. And so for weeks and weeks, we planned this vacation trip, and we imagined what we would do while we were at Glacier. We pictured ourselves hiking through the beautiful mountains and the beautiful hills and doing some fishing and a variety of other things. And then we arrived at Glacier National Park, and it began raining. And I mean, really, we got there, it started raining. And it rained the entire first day, and it rained the entire second day, and it rained the entire third day. And day after day after day, instead of going out fishing and hiking and doing the things we were doing, we spent much of our time inside the camper listening to the rain coming down on the camper with our two very small children and my parents. And we as parents learned at that time why some animals eat their young. We learned that. Things did not go exactly as we had expected. This morning, I want to speak about the power of expectations. We're doing a series of sermons in the months of September and October and the first Sunday in November called Run the New Program. If you look behind me, you noticed all of this old technology up here, and you've seen some out here in the hallway as well. This is to remind us of the series that we're doing called Run the New Program. What I've been suggesting over these weeks, September and now into October, is that the Christian journey is very much like a group of people who need to run a different program. We have a program, very much like a computer program, that we're running, and sometimes it feels like it's running us. And it causes us to respond and react to things in a variety of different ways that are less than the people that we really want to be. And the journey of following Jesus, I've been suggesting, is very much like the need to run a new program. This morning, I want to speak about one very powerful aspect of an old program that we need to be aware of, and that is the power of expectations. I'd like to begin by telling you some stories. I want to tell you the story of three different situations, three different people. The first one is a couple that I know. I'm changing their names. They live in another state. None of you would possibly know them. The second one is somebody that I've heard of, and the third one is somebody that you have probably heard of as well. A couple by the name of John and Julie. John and Julie live in another state. John and Julie attended a seminar a number of years ago in which they learned how to run a business out of their home. They got really excited as they heard stories of people that were running a business out of their home and that were doing very, very well. And so they went to another seminar and then another, and they were absolutely hooked as they began to imagine these new possibilities for their lives. As time went on, John and Julie began hanging little stickers on their refrigerator to remind them of where they were going. If you visit their house, you'd see a beautiful sticker of a house. It was actually a photo of a gorgeous house, sort of a mansion. And John and Julie would say, "We're working toward the day when we will live in a house that looks like that one." It stood in stark contrast to the dilapidated old home in which they were living at that time. And then they put up some photos of cars. They say, "One day we're gonna drive a car that looks something like that." It was a beautiful pickup for him, and she had a sporty car that she was gonna drive. And then there was a photo of a boat that was almost a yacht, an enormous and gorgeous boat that was on this refrigerator. John and Julie would point to these things and they would say proudly, "We're going to live like that one day." But you go back to John and Julie's house 15 years later, and here's what you would learn. You would learn that they were still living in their dilapidated old house, that they had worked extraordinarily hard, but things had not turned out the way that they had wanted. If anything, their house was more dilapidated than it had been 15 years earlier. They were not driving the new and nicer cars, and they certainly didn't have a yacht parked out in the front of their house. You could almost hear a sigh. as John and Judy measured their expectations and in effect said, this is not what we were expecting. That's John and Julie. I want to tell you a story that is told by a professor at a Christian college in an eastern state. It tells about two young people who came to their university and studied at this university, a sharp young man, a sharp young woman. The two of them met one another and they fell in love and they had a fairy tale romance and they decided to get married before they were done with college. And so they were married and they lived together, presumably in married student housing. And the professor was surprised when a few months later, the young man showed up in his office looking clearly forlorn. What's happening? The professor asked. He said, well, it's my marriage. The professor was startled. It was just months later. He was startled. What's happening in your marriage? And the young man said, it just isn't what I expected. He went on to describe what I have called the part of marriage when you learn about morning breath and evening gas. And he said, it just isn't what I expected. The third story is someone that many of you have heard here before. Her name is Judy Garland. In many ways, hers is the story of a woman who got everything that she had expected. She was an extraordinary talent in her time. She was a clear and shining star. Many of you know her from The Wizard of Oz. She was Dorothy, Judy Garland. An incredible, incredible talent. One of a million in her generation. Judy Garland had a voice like a bell, and she was an actress who had courage on the stage, and she achieved everything that she could have hoped. Fame and success, and she was well-known, and she was polished, but her adult years were stitched through and through with tragedy. Alcoholism and various battles, and her life ended tragically young. The truth is, that story could be told of dozens and dozens of people that we have heard of. I mentioned just her today. Here is somebody who had achieved all of their expectations, and it wasn't what they expected. This morning, I want to talk about a powerful, powerful program, which is the power of expectation. This is a difficult thing to talk about because, in many regards, expectation is a good thing, at least in the very, very beginnings. Because expectation begins with dreams. This morning I'm going to ask you to try to discern the difference between our dreams that are important for all of us and expectations that become hardened in our lives. It works something like this. There comes a time in our lives when we have a dream, and a dream is a good thing. I believe, by the way, every one of us needs to have dreams. I think there's no stage in our lives in which having a dream or a vision for your life is not necessary. I think the very, very old need to have a vision for their lives. It may be as simple as a vision to impart the wisdom that they've gathered over all the years to their children and their grandchildren and their great-great-great-grandchildren. I think young people need to have a vision, whether it's the teenage girl who just wants to make the volleyball team for the very first time. I think that when we don't have a vision for our lives, we're in serious trouble. The problem this morning is not with visions. The problem is not with dreams. The problem is when vision becomes hardened and it becomes written in stone and it has to look a particular way. It's as though it is chiseled in stone and our dreams become expectations. I suspect you know what I'm talking about. An expectation is what is happening when you hear somebody say, by the time I'm 40, I'm going to be wealthy. You've heard people say this, haven't you? That is an expectation. An expectation is what happens when you hear somebody say, if I could just get that husband that I'm married to, or that wife that I'm married to do the things that I want, or those children in my home, or my aunt or my uncle, or fill in your only blanks, if I could only get them to do the things I want them to do, finally I'm going to be happy. An expectation is something that you're harboring when you're saying to yourself, when I get out of this job and get another job, finally I'm going to be happy. An expectation is something that you're working with when you're thinking to yourself, if I can just make it to the day of retirement and I can walk away and I can say goodbye to this job for the last time, finally I'm going to be happy. And the problem with expectations, carved in stone, chiseled out, specific and hardened, is that they are almost always disappointing. Think about your own experiences for just a moment. Think about people that you have known who have had high expectations about something, only to find that they are disappointed when the time comes. And notice what happens to you and to me when we are harboring expectations. There comes a time in this season when we have dreamed a dream, and then the dream has become hardened, and then we become willful in achieving it. We will stop at almost nothing to make that thing happen. We will impose our will on others if we have to. This is the power of expectations. We are looking this morning at the story of a man who harbored expectations, I believe. His name is Jacob. We've met him before. If you were here last Sunday, we met Jacob. He was the second of the two twins that were born to Isaac and Rebekah. Important to note that he was the second of the two twins, meaning he was the one that was not born to privilege. All of the privileges went to his older brother Esau. Jacob came in line number two. When I think of Jacob, I imagine somebody who at some time had begun to harbor a dream. A dream, remember, a vision is a good thing. It might be that Jacob was sitting at the table one day when all of the first helpings went to his brother Esau, and he watched this and he thought to himself, I don't think it's right and fair that my brother should get the best share of things and I get the leftovers. And it may be that he had heard the words of encouragement that his father had spoken over Esau, that his father was not speaking about him, and a vision began to emerge for his life, a vision of someone who is created in God's image, someone who is important just because they are. But notice the things that began to happen in Jacob's life. Jacob's name, by the way, in Hebrew, one of the meanings of the name Jacob is one who supplants. That means someone who takes somebody else's place. And this is the story of Jacob. You remember last Sunday, we looked at the story of how Jacob had stolen, well, had bartered for his brother's birthright, this all-important gift that was given to his older brother. Jacob had seen his brother extremely hungry and tired one day, and for a pot of stew, he had sold to his brother a pot of stew for a birthright in return. This is an extraordinarily important story. And then, before the events of the story that we're looking at this morning, before these events, he had once again swindled his brother. He and his mother had contrived together to make sure that Jacob got his father's deathbed blessing rather than Esau. And so we are meeting this man who has connived and worked and dreamed and embraced expectations and then willfully contrived to get the things that he wants through his whole life. This is Jacob. But I need to tell you where we meet Jacob this morning. It's not a very pleasant place. We meet Jacob on a journey, at least on the surface, to go find a wife. That is the surface story, why he's traveling. Apparently, he'd been on eHarmony, had found somebody that he was rather interested in, and he's journeying. But the real story behind the story is that Jacob is journeying for his life. If you were to back up just a few paragraphs, here's what you would read was taking place in the story behind the story. Esau, his older brother, held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing that his father Isaac had given to Jacob rather than to him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near. I will kill my brother." When we meet Jacob this morning, he is a frightened, frightened man. He is a man who does not know if he has a future. He is a man who, based on his dreams and his expectations and his contriving, his willfulness, has created such an enemy in his brother Esau that his brother Esau now is seething death threats. We meet Jacob this morning and he is alone. That's interesting. He's traveling this long journey by himself. He lays his head down on the stone and stares up at the constellations, but his mind is not on the falling stars this particular evening. His mind is on the question of whether or not he has a future. His brother is seething threats about him. And as Jacob lays there, we are told in the book of Genesis that he has a dream. Here's how it's described. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. And when he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and he lay down to sleep. And by the way, I'm pretty sure he woke up with a very stiff neck the next morning. He had a dream, in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven. And the angels of God were ascending and descending on the stairway. And there above it, and by the way, there's a beautiful obscurity in the Hebrew in this particular phrase. There above it stood the Lord, or it could also be read, there next to him stood the Lord. Is the Lord at the top of the stairway in the heavens, or is the Lord standing right next to him in the place where he lay? Maybe the answer is yes. There above it, or there next to him, stood the Lord, and the Lord said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. The earth will be a better place because you and your offspring are here. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. Don't look now, but Jacob has just experienced the difference between expectation and hope. You see, expectation begins in the right places. Expectations begins with dreaming dreams, sometimes even dreaming God dreams that lead us forward and lead us in the right direction. The problem with these expectations is when they become hardened, when they take a certain form and a certain shape, and they absolutely have to look like this. The difference between expectation and hope is expectation is dependent upon me and my ability to cause it to happen. And hope is rooted in the activity of God. See, that's what's taking place in this story. It is, by the way, it is extraordinarily gracious that God appears to Jacob. You'd have to say if there's anybody that doesn't deserve a visitation from God, it's this guy in the way he's lived up till now. Those people who say that in the Old Testament we get the God of vengeance and in the New Testament we get grace haven't read the Old Testament carefully enough. This is an outrageously gracious story of God's appearance to Jacob. And do you remember two Sundays ago when we were talking about how in our times of anxiety, we look toward the future and we become anxious about the future. And two Sundays ago, I suggested to you that the new program that we need to run is one when we're no longer living in the future all the time looking at what's going to happen, but we need to look in the present right here. This story, building on a very similar idea, suggests to us that we need to stop looking in other places and we need to look right here. Notice how Jacob responds to the dream that he's just had. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. And he was afraid, but not the kind of afraid that you have when you're running for your life. He was the kind of afraid that you have when you say something like this, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Jacob wakes up to realize that there's a stairway to heaven right where he is. It's not over there. It's not down in Egypt. It's not over in Traverse City. There's a stairway to heaven that stretches right to the place where he is at this present moment. And if Jacob can stop looking over there and over there and over there and over there, Jacob can discern what God is doing right here. Do you see? The time of the kingdom of God is now, and the place of the kingdom of God is here. When we're told in Genesis that the stairway to heaven runs to this place and that there's this freight moving backward and forward, there are the angels descending and ascending back up the stairs, and that God is at the top or is God at the bottom or God is all over the place. What the Bible is describing to us in this is a place where heaven and earth are overlapping. This is a place where the concerns of earth go directly to the heart of heaven. And this is a place where the will of God in heaven comes directly to earth. This is the place where heaven and earth are intersecting. And that place is right here. I wonder if any of you recognize similarities between this story and the preaching of Jesus. Did any of you remember that day when Jesus began his preaching ministry and he preached that message that was at the very center of his life and ministry? It went something like this. The kingdom of God is at hand. Turn around and believe the good news. And the disciples of Jesus, in one way or another, were always saying to Jesus, when you say the kingdom of God is at hand, I assume you mean over there or over there or over there or over there. In the preaching of Jesus, the kingdom of God was always at hand. Here, in this place, not somewhere else, it's right here. And to say that the kingdom of God is at hand is to say that heaven and earth are overlapping right here, and that God's will is breaking out in this place, even as it is in heaven. People around Jesus, they were always looking someplace else. They say, Lord, when, where will we see the kingdom? And Jesus would say, well, inasmuch as you've seen me casting out evil, and inasmuch as you've seen the healing of the sick, I tell you, the reign of God, God's kingdom, has already come upon you. Do you see? The kingdom of God is not then and there. The kingdom of God is here and now. And this changes everything for people who are learning the difference between expectancy and hope. I want you to remember with me, if you would, the day in the ministry of Jesus when he turned to his disciples. It was a decisive moment in the Gospels, and Jesus turned to his disciples and he said, out of curiosity, who are people saying that I am? And they answered, well, there are some people who are saying that you're this, and there's some people who are saying that you're that. And Jesus said, all right, how about you? Who do you say that I am? I imagine that there was a nervous silence for a moment, and then Peter, the courageous, spoke and said, you are the Christ. You, Jesus, are the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father in heaven has made this known to you. And then Jesus went on to describe what this would mean. He said, I need to warn you. What you expect it to mean when you confess that I am Messiah is you expect this means that I'm going to ride at the front of a great military throng and I'm going to be on the highest horse and we're all going to ride into Jerusalem or wherever together and we're going to have our swords and our sheaths and we're going to overthrow the Romans and finally, you think it means that I'm going to ride into Jerusalem and make things the way you want them. This is the expectation of disciples. But Jesus says, I need to tell you the way it's really going to be. Here's what's going to happen. Some very, very powerful people are going to get a hold of me, and they're going to abuse me, and they're going to oppress me, and they're going to beat me, and they're going to murder me. They're going to put me to death. And on the third day, my Father will raise me from the dead. And Peter, the courageous, says, how could this ever be? This couldn't possibly happen to you. Because you see, Peter was expecting this, but what was going to happen was this. Here's the difference between expectation and hope. Expectation hardens our dreams and visions so that they look like a certain thing. It has to look just like this. We then have to be willful to make it happen, impose our will on others if necessary. For heaven's sakes, this is how wars get started. Hope, on the other hand, hope lives in the confidence that God is in this moment, at this place, working God's will for God's people right now. And no matter how many doors may close, no matter how rotten things may look, no matter how bad things will go, right here in this place at this time, there's a stairway to heaven right here in Alma, Michigan. The will of God breaking out right here on earth, even as it is in heaven. Friends, you know how the story goes. You know that after the confession of Jesus, you know that Jesus was really crucified. You know that the dreams of the disciples were destroyed. Every expectation that they had was utterly obliterated. And you know that on the third day, God raised Jesus Christ from the dead because God is the author of hope, not expectations. Do you see the difference? I want to tell you about a lady who is a remarkable vision of hope, at least in my experience of her. It was a lady by the name of Lisa. Some of you knew her. She was a member of our congregation for a number of years until she passed here a few years ago. Lisa was born in Germany in the year that World War I ended. She was in her 90s when she passed away. Lisa was born in Germany in the year that World War I ended. And those of you who remember history will remember that the Germans were required to pay war reparations to the rest of Europe because of their role in World War I. And so the treasury was depleted and they went into one of the worst depressions in European history. It was an absolutely abysmal depression. Lisa was born in the year that that depression started. Now, her father had worked for the government of Germany, and because he was a discerning man, he began to recognize changes that were taking place in his country. When the Nazi Party began moving, he recognized it for what it was earlier than a lot of people did. And so her father took his family, if you can imagine, moved to the United States of America for a new situation, a new opportunity. And they arrived on Ellis Island in the year 1929. And some of you know that what that means is that they arrived in Ellis Island in the year that the American Great Depression began. This is a lady who, from the earliest days of her life, had seen challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge. But if you knew Lisa, you would know that behind her beautiful brown eyes, there was this glimmer of ornery playfulness. It was always there. She had more challenges than most anybody in this room is going to likely face in their lifetime. But there was about Lisa, at least in my experience of her, a playfulness. Here was a lady who had come to dead end after dead end after dead end after dead end through her lifetime. And yet here was a lady who had learned to wait on the Lord, to watch new opportunities to develop and new possibilities to emerge. And she was never hardened by expectations that become disappointed. She was a lady who lived her life in hope. Well, my friend Mario Lucchese was telling me this week that he can really relate to the idea of running a new program. Mario is one of these techie, geeky, genius guys that guys like me are always going to and asking things like, Mario, can you help me to figure out how to turn on my phone? And Mario works with a bunch of techie, genius kinds of people, and in the place where he works, they are literally setting up a new computer system that is running an entirely new program. If I understand correctly, 20-some people are having to learn how to run a brand new program, one they've never run before. You can imagine how hard that would be, having to unlearn much of what you've already learned and then having to relearn the things that you need to relearn for new purposes and to improve and to grow and so forth. And friends, I tell you this story just to say, it should come as no surprise to us that running a new program is a challenge. We've been, many of us, living our lives out of the powerful old program of expectations for years. Some of us, from the time that we were small children, we've learned to grasp tightly to expectations. And then when things don't go the way we want them to, we become angry and frustrated and we try harder. Some of us have become so discouraged, we have dreams that seem never to be fulfilled, and then pretty soon we're afraid to even have expectations before we call ourselves Detroit Lions fans. Others of us, under the power of the old program, have high expectations of others. Notice, not holding others accountable, not being present to other people in such a way that the best is possible for them. Others of us live with people we have high expectations of them, so that if they don't do what we want them to do or say what we want them to say, we live in perpetual frustration with them. There is an alternative to expectations. We don't have to live by this old program, and the new opportunity is hopefulness, to live hopefully. Can you imagine awakening every day to the awareness that there is a stairway to heaven, that God is present right here, right now, at this time? Could you imagine engaging your life prayerfully every day so that every day you're seeking to discern vision for your life? Where is it that God is calling you, and what direction do you need to be going? But could you imagine that instead of hardening those dreams, instead of hardening them, you remain faithful and trusting in the one who grants them? Look, if a door closes this way, if you're not working this thing alone, if you're on somebody else's agenda, another one will open. And the vision of living hopefully is a vision of trust. I hope that you're beginning to see as we go through this series that the old program is constantly working by anxiety, constantly by anxiety. And the new program is constantly working by trust. We trust the one who grants the vision. We trust the one who empowers us to follow the vision. We entrust ourselves to the one who, when doors close, will open new ones. And we live, rather than being anxious people, we live as trusting, open, and even playful. In just a moment, I'm going to invite you to a very, very powerful practice of the church, the receiving of the Lord's Supper. In my opinion, there's no more hopeful practice that we will ever do in our lives than what we're about to do in just a moment. Before we do, I'd like to invite you to set your attention on the screen in front of you.